Welcome to our Henken Student Podcast. Today we'll discuss the topic of sustainability and more especially the growth. We are facing an environmental crisis, a crisis where people are trying to master the world and nature through science and an ever-growing focus on economic growth, but which is only leading to more environmental destructions and inequalities. The sole focus on progress and GDP growth and the belief that GDP growth is the solution to all our problems has led to the sustainability crisis we are facing now. For a very long time, the focus has been on growing our economies, that more is better. Sure, it is, but till humanity reaches the tipping point of overconsumption, for example, Europeans consume on average 26 kilograms of textiles per person per year, and in the EU, over half of adults are overweight. This has been done by decreasing regulation on a global level and favoring global trade and multinational companies at the cost of local businesses. But is more always better? The growth changes this view. The growth states that life should be at the center of economic systems and focus should be on well-being rather than economic growth. GDP shouldn't be a proxy of progress. Instead, we should focus on how we could live better, more happily by producing and consuming less. Based on the degrowth thinking, rich countries should reduce global inequalities by producing only as much as meet their true needs, while poorer countries would be allowed to catch up, but only as far as needs are reached. In other words, less production and less consumption for everyone in the long run. One way to achieve this is by transitioning away from the globalized world where multinational companies dominate trade to communities and businesses where production and consumption is more local. There are currently many such transitional processes going on at different levels of society. The Back to the Land movement is one such transition movement that is going on at the individual level, where individuals are moving out to the countryside to live a more local and more eco-friendly life. According to a study done in Sweden by Laszlo, psychological suffering plays a role in motivating people to move back out into the countryside to live a simpler and more local life closer to nature. People are just tired of the meaningless way we are conducting our lives in modern society and how, without any respect, we relate to nature and other living beings. So, we will be joined today by Fanny Toro, who has chosen to live a simpler, more local life closer to nature at Kiru Eco Village. Kiru Eco Village is a community village in the middle of the Finnish countryside. The aim of this village is to promote an ecologically and socially sustainable lifestyle in all areas of life. Food is grown organically, and what cannot be produced at the village is bought locally, and the village is energy self-sufficient. Today, we will discuss with Fanny how sustainable organizing and degrowth is done in practice, and especially touch upon what kind of mindset it requires. So, welcome Fanny, great to have you here.
Okay, thank you for inviting me here. My name is Fanny Torro. I live in Keuruu Eco Village in middle Finland. I work as a poet, a yoga teacher, and a literature therapy facilitator. I'm age of 32 at the moment, and I've been living in this eco village around 5.5 years. Mostly I've been doing here some gardening and like this, taking part of the organization and developing work throughout the years I've been here. But obviously this place has been way, way before I came here, so I'm not the founder or anything. Yeah.
Cool. Well, if you've been part, it's been around for many years. I mean, a lot of people may or may not have heard of what an eco-village actually is. So could you share just quickly, like, maybe through the history of Keuruu, what an eco-village is and how it was created?
Okay, so the history behind this place is rather interesting. There was a TV show in 1996 where Jari Sarasvuo, a Finnish media person, maybe how to call him. He had a visiting woman there, and his visitor, she had an idea of a community. At the moment, it was mostly a community of all elder women living together in the countryside, taking care of each other, kind of like, like sharing, caring communities thing. And then she got like hundreds of phone calls after the TV show, and there was also some men calling like, can we also join, should it be only be enough for women? And then there was like the group process was starting then, and I don't remember actually how many of them I had just like told this time many times before, but a group of people then they had some meetings, and they were thinking about how they would like to build up a community, and then where they were looking for places around Finland. And in here, some of the group felt that, okay, this is the place. So in 1997, actually, I think it was the 1st of June, they settled here. Again, I don't remember how many people, but something between 10 and 20, I guess, in the beginning. And they rented this place for 1 year, and after 1 year of rental, like, the place was owned by Keuruu town. So then they asked the loan from bank, different banks, and one of the local banks gave a loan, as far as I remember, it was 2 to 3 million marks at the moment, so pretty big loan for people who basically do not maybe have so much economical affluence, but a very good idea and a good values to set up this place. And the loan is already paid, so it is paid off until June 2017. So we are basically owning this place now. So, but that was the start, and the population has changed like completely since the beginning, so there are no one anymore living from the founders, but some of them and many of the previous members are still our roots, so they visit us, we are keeping in contact with them, but and the amount of people has changed a lot. Like, in the beginning there was no limits of who can come, and then it was seen that, okay, this is not working, that this cannot be a place just to come and go. We need to have some certain selection of people, and all the processes, decision-making processes, selection processes of members and stuff, they have been developing throughout these years. And actually next summer we are having 25th year anniversary. That's a big thing.
Wow, congrats. That's a lot of years to be involved like that.
Oh yeah.
Lots of people coming and going, and I dare say, I mean, communal living in a village environment is very, I myself have been part of like a group living environments, and they can come with a lot of different aspects, and everybody like brings their own aspect. Mm-hmm. And so what I'm curious is how the eco-village has managed to promote this ecologicalness and this social sustainability lifestyle and what you do through either the acceptance process of who's coming or the style of living or just how that has manifested in your daily or your life, I guess.
I think it is a process generating itself over and over again. So we are kind of like refining the system with every member, or like every new person coming here, we need to like kind of like set ourselves to this certain person and maybe like think like if this personality or her or his skills or whatever is now a good thing for here, and if that person is stable enough, because community living can be very intense, it can be shaky sometimes, and if the person itself doesn't have enough own tools to handle these ups and downs and floating things of the community sometimes, so if you don't have enough of your own tools, it might cause some challenges. So we kind of like wish that the people applying here are having enough of these personal tools. Of course, we are helping each other to handle things. But about the selection process, well, After the first years, the pretty soon they created the kind of like steps of becoming a member. So we have these, like first you come here for 2 days visit or a weekend visit, and then our community meeting, which we have every week. Then we do a decision like, okay, how does this person feel or the family feel? Okay, do we have space? Do we have capacity for these? And then they can come for 2 weeks. And yet again, after 2 weeks, we have a decision. And we try to get to know these people every time a little bit better, and they get to know us and our processes. And then after 2 weeks, there is an option for a 6 months trial. And after the 6 months, there is the final decision if you become a member. And then the membership is like for like until you finish it, unless you there come some severe problems. But also with the severe problems we do have first, we try to like solve them out instead of like saying like, okay, go off. but like, you know, it's one of the most important and one of the most challenging processes to choose people here. It's really, really like, wow, how to say, but it's always sure. Nice to see that so many good people are coming. So it's mostly like we want to welcome, but you know, like, for example, you don't have to have any problems, but I mean, if we, for example, if you happen to have a lot of single parents with little kids, so we cannot have too many of the certain group of people if we need persons to take care of the everyday life. Or like, we couldn't have too much of certain aged people. We try to keep it somehow in balance. So then it is maybe most best working. Yeah.
No, that's great to think about, especially the balance of people that you have to have in an environment like that.
Yeah.
Something that has piqued my interest here, given our interest in developing and organizing for this sustainability, it seems it's very like people, right? It has a lot to do with the people that live there and interact there. And you mentioned that, I mean, obviously every community has problems that arise. So what are some of the strategies or processes that you all utilize to grow each other to fit the community or to work through some of these problems as they come across?
Well, that's a very good question. I think the most important thing is that everyone who comes here as a member or as a member trial is willing to grow as a person, to face each other, to face yourself in the mirror of the other person. And to try to commit to this nonviolent communicating way, so that is maybe the key, that you need to be willing to take responsibility of your own communication, of your own development as a person. Even though sometimes it's not about you, it really might be that someone else is having the problem and you are being victimized or somehow. But so the will to be developing yourself is the key. And well, we do have like, for example, some sharing circles, or we can be having some facilitating processes if, for example, two people are having some kind of argument with each other and they cannot solve it themselves. So we may have one or two neutral persons then having like a facilitated process with them, and usually those things are sorted out and people understand each other way better. And yeah, I think the communication is the key, to really like ask, not assume, and handling your own emotions, trying to understand why something is triggering me, or why this person is triggering me, or maybe like so being like a sensible adult to your inner child, and maybe to the other person's inner child as well, but still not like forgetting that if some strong emotions arise, so it's also everyone's responsibility to learn to express them in a healthy way, maybe in your own solitude or maybe with someone else's, and I don't know. But it is a lot of like emotional work. And once we are living pretty close each other, at the moment there are around 25 adults and more than 10 kids. So some people especially are living like very close next to each other. They share the bathrooms, they share the kitchens, and they're like every day we're meeting the same people. So you're kind of like cannot escape each other. So it's super yeah. important to be emotionally skilled and aware. Yeah.
Wow, living in a family of what 30, 35 people, that takes a lot of balance, and like you said, communication. So, and it brings me back to an earlier comment where you mentioned about how there used to be no limits, right, to how many people, how long they stay, there was some sort of change in the mindset. What kind of awareness does the group or the community have about its own limits in terms of size, in terms of capacity for change, in terms of these concepts that we're talking about, things like degrowth, things like what? Could you speak a little bit on those awarenesses?
Yeah, so we have learned that like degrowth, I mean like not the not growing too fast as a community. Like if we do, we need to regulate how many people we are taking in the trials at the same time, for example. So that is one thing for sure we have learned. And then there are some certain types of challenges we need to say no already in the like early phase. So for example, a very acute crisis or very acute some kind of imbalance state or problems with drugs or alcohol, we need to like know that they have been history, so like because things here are, we are like, for example, we have open doors, almost nothing is locked. You know, like we need to trust each other so much, and the trust is actually very important also, like if you think about how many new people can come at the same time. So we need to get to learn each other pretty well, and then some ones can come, and they do come in waves. And if there are more people coming, then we need to like again like refine our decision making processes or share the responsibilities or anyway take care that enough people in the most essential areas of daily work is like we can secure that things are running, like the heating system is running, or in the summertime the gardening is running, or there are enough people doing lunch like we are having shared meals every day, breakfast and lunch, if we just have people to make them. And how to say, I may be losing the question.
No, that's okay.
But yeah, like, and we do have we call them K rules, so they are formed of four K words in Finnish. So they are like kind of like we try to have very few rules, but they are like the like somehow boundaries, what we can refer to also if we are having some problems. So the first one is, I just translate into English, is it's so hard to translate them like immediately, but there is like one is for like non-violent communication. So if you are being violent in your communication or in your acts, so that is not, we try to keep ourselves like non-violent in words and acts. And second one is not punch drinking. I mean, like, and with the drugs, we have no like zero tolerance, and that's maybe one of the most important things, especially here, because many communities are not so strict about, like, for example, cannabis or something. But we have decided that there is a zero tolerance with that, because of the kids, we want to keep them, have them like the environment clear, but also I think it's one of the values to see that this personal or spiritual growth can happen also without the substance use, or it can happen like in communication with each other, with the nature, however you are processing things. So like with the drugs, and then there is the third one is respecting the everyone's own space. You know, like when you live in a community and there might be people interesting to you, appealing to you, so you still respect each other's boundaries. If someone says no, then it is a no. You cannot come, like you cannot have intimacy, for example, with the person who's saying no to you. You have to like accept that, and also like giving enough space anyway. So if someone needs to have some distance, then you respect it as much as you can. And what was the first one? Fourth one. Yeah, like everyone has the right for their own religion or worldview or ism or whatever. So you may be strongly following something, but you need to let each other live their own way. So not trying to impact on each other's worldviews too much. So you can discuss, of course, but if, for example, if a person is a Buddhist, so the other can be a Muslim, and then there might be an atheist, and you need to accept that the other one is thinking the other way around, and then we can live together.
For sure.
Yeah.
Wow. I like that list. It reminds me of a time I lived in like a Quaker oriented communal situation back in the US for a while, which had a similar set of rules, or not rules, like expectations of living, right? And I guess if this community has a set of expectations, a set of rules that seem to work for that group, do you see this kind of thing applicable in other contexts? Do you see in a way that it could be applied in other spaces and other spheres of life, either on a small scale or a large scale?
I would like to see that like working also outside of our place. Like in general, if you think about being more compassionate to each other and not acting violently or accepting the differences, or I mean, like, I would like to ask who is benefiting from the any kind of like excessive use of drugs or other substances. So I would like to see that kind of change happening also in big scale, that people are more like taking taking responsibility of how they are acting towards each other, towards the environment, towards themselves. And maybe those guidelines we are having are kind of like trying to direct people to that respective and friendly way of facing each other and the life here. So I think it is changing. Like at least I see many like these younger generations. I think people are getting more tolerant with like differences, and I don't know. I would like to see that change happening, because if you like take responsibility of how you are presenting yourself in the way of how, if you take responsibility of how you are there with each other and stuff, so I mean, then you are maybe not hiding. You don't have to hide yourself. You don't have to like abuse anyone or anything. And you may have also more like joy and you, like you are not against anything or anyone. You are more like standing on the same side, even though you are different. Yeah, I would like to see that happening.
seems great. Yeah, definitely to have that in further places. And I mean, it makes me think about the other concepts that we were talking about this, the sustainability side of things. There's the organization and the self-improvement and this like spiritual well-being that is very focused on this acceptance. Do you think that by having this community mindset, it further enables more of a sustainability mindset? Or if it's a give and take, how do you think those interrelate, the sustainability and this openness, acceptance, and community feeling?
I think, like, for example, we have change of services here. A lot of, like, some people do treatment, some people do something else for each other. So we are like, we do have different fields of responsibilities here. Someone is doing something else for the community, someone else is doing something else. So we very concretely see this giving and receiving. So I think that that is very visible here. And if you think like being sustainability, I wrote something there. Yeah, like you have maybe, you can, it might be easier to apply the attitude of serving, like really like being in service of something, being in service in something bigger as you think about like the I wouldn't like to separate human and nature, but if you think about being in service of the nature, if you are gardening, you need to co-work with everything that, like you need to co-work with the soil, you need to co-work with the climate, you need to co-work with the plants and everything. I think like this way of living makes you more sensitive to these sometimes not so visible but very like existing connections between each other. So the codependency, you're not like having this, you maybe not having this idea of, yeah, like I am so self-sufficient, I don't need anyone else or anything else, or I can decide everything what happens and stuff. So, and it isn't so really, like you can decide and there is some responsibilities of course, but yeah, but the codependency, I think I like that concept. So you don't have to like be so self-sufficient with everything, like, and for example, we share the facilities, we share cars, we share kids care or emotional support or whatever, like, I mean, yeah, and it's a richness that we don't have to stand alone things.
Yeah.
And also, yeah, with like, I because of the gardening, I maybe look things through that, but also, like, if you think about, you would like to grow only one plant, like, monocultural way, it's usually not working very well. The plant needs the other plants, it needs the other insects, it needs the worms, it needs the bacteria, the fungi, it needs... Also, it needs the conditions around, the rain and the water and the wind and stuff. So everything is connected. So I think community living makes it just like very visible in every way that you are connected and it's a richness. Yeah. It's also a challenge, but still.
I think I'm going to take that quote that you just said. We're going to use that one as the head of the podcast. Community living makes you more. Like, beautiful quote. Put it on a headline. Man, no, I mean, you have this concept of codependence. That there's so many directions I could go off of that commentary that you just made. And I think this codependence, I'd like, and support and sharing. I think. There's definitely the possibility to connect that and actually directly apply the concepts of like this degrowth that we were talking about. Like you said, you don't need a new bathroom for every person who moves into the house, right? You could grow, obviously you could like build more, but you can share that space because no one uses them for 24 hours a day. You can share the kitchen space, you can share the childcare and make it all work out. But like you said, that doesn't come without its own set of challenges. And so I guess, what do you think the main challenge is? I mean, it sounds idyllic right now. We're talking about this beautiful space and like self-growth, gardening, yoga, but what are some of the main challenges that you've had?
Well, in a more material way, if you think about, people do have very different concepts of how you handle things or take care of things. For example, we just yesterday discussed with one neighbor about like sharing cars and loaning your car to someone else, and we were both agreeing like, no, I couldn't loan my car to everyone, to some people who I know that take care well enough. So I mean, we sometimes find our tools way behind, like I mean, some tools could have been stored better so that they would last longer. So I mean that kind of problems obviously comes when you are sharing things that they might not always be in the condition you maybe would like to, or if no one personally is owning something, so then no one is owning it. I mean, then it's no one is maybe in response, and that kind of cause to some people's that mindset, okay, like I don't have to care about it because this is not mine. But I think that's not the very big problem here. It sometimes is, but I think people here also understand that even though you don't personally own something, it's worth respecting and worth taking care. But that can be challenging. And then people's different ways of living. You have to stand a lot, and you have to sometimes walk like this. Like if a person is very tidy, you want to keep things clean, and then another person has very very bohemian way of taking care of kitchen, for example. So that can be like cleaning and cleaning concept sometimes become an issue. But also there might be some, well, if you think about growing kids, you might have different ideas of what is allowed or what is not. And then when there are many kids around the same age living together, and you need to communicate the similar rules but I think, And then it is important to take care that people really are like equal, to see that the things that people do here for the community, like obviously some things are more inevitable, like the heating. Like in winter, no one would live here if no one is taking care of the heating. But I mean, like, we should appreciate each other. Like someone has different skills, different resources, different phase of life. Like someone has family, has maybe a little less time to give for the community, but not like judging each other or demanding. Again, it's getting easily violent communication when you are getting frustrated to someone else. So please like. Talking with each other before it comes, like, so that you cannot even talk because you're so annoyed to someone else.
And I mean, we've spoken a lot about the community, and like you just mentioned some of the challenges and a lot of the benefits. I'm wondering if we can take a minute to just zoom out and look at it from like a structural, from an international, national level, as we we've noticed, seen online, they're a member of the GEN Finland and the Global Eco Village Network. Can you tell us more about how you're actually interrelated or codependent on, or however it happens to be, with these larger organizations, and how you support them and how they support you?
Well, I think they are most like the importance is in the beginning or the first years of the community. So then you may have many of the questions arising, and you need the most of the support. You are forming new structures, and I think in the first 10 years, 15 years of this place, the connections were the most active. They are still alive. I mean, and we have had I think it was 2008 or 2009, we had this Global Eco Village Network Europe's year conference in here, or the Finnish the Finnish Association. It has been here several times, and actually last summer we had a community festival here organized in cooperation with this SCEU. It's actually, I think it is, yeah, part of the. There was a phone. There was a call coming. I needed to put it off. Yeah, that was the interrupt. The support. And for example, the Finnish department, they have provided these clips guide that you may find them on their site. So it is a very profound tool for setting up a community, handling the possible challenges in the community, and also the decision making, the circle way working, nonviolent communication, any kind of things that may come up. And also we have got a lot of volunteers and also the members throughout these organizations. So being visible with the GEN's network brings every year at least some, sometimes many, many like emails and phone calls here at, hey, I found your community, can I come? So also being available. The Global Eco Village Network in general wants to to provide the information about this community alternative and to really lift it up like the community way of living some to one way or another is I think it is if not everyone's thing, but it should be more acknowledge in the society. So I think these organizations are helping us all come together, as the network word itself expresses. Yeah.
Cool. I mean, so the network brings people together and helps people grow, especially in those beginning days, you said, or the beginning years, which is also valuable. So as we near the end of the time that you're putting together, I guess. One of the purposes of us as students of looking at these things is applying these messages and these lessons learned and taking examples and models that we come across and applying them to our own futures and the visions of the world that we see moving forward. And so I guess now I'm asking for a little bit of abstraction here to say what are the drivers for change, the motivation behind you or the people you live with? What is it that drives you to live in this community, to live sustainably, to live and organize in such a good way?
I think many of us see this as a more holistic way of living and more like true way of living, yeah, but I mean it's like a more genuine, you are more connected to each other, to the nature, to revive some cultural and societal inherited you maybe have and maybe has been put away with people moving to cities and stuff. So you you pick up the good things from the tribal culture, for example, how people had used to live way before our nowadays society structures. So creating systems and structures for people, not for systems for systems, you know. I think also it is important that there are different kind of communities, because not everyone can fit in the same box. So I think it's important that you can have you can maybe focus on something. Some community is more spiritual driven, some is more gardening, self sufficiency driven, someone else is something else. So also understanding that by networking different focuses, you don't have to do everything alone, and I think that is very good, very important message to people of today. It is enough of who you are, you don't have to be everything yourself. Yeah, together you may create way more. It's amazing. Yeah.
So many life lessons coming out of this. So I guess that brings me to the end of the questions that I was hoping to bring together today. But do you have a final word or message to us or any other students about as we look to our futures and as we look to find our own communities and our own spaces and our own way to manifest our view of sustainability, our view of growth or degrowth? Do you have any words of wisdom for us to take with us as we move forward? I know you've already said a lot, but
what could I pick up from my notes? Well, I think value the differences. Like, I mean, one strength of our community is that we have people so different age, for example. So the wisdom comes from large scale. So one good tip is that. It might be beneficial to build up like a old village. So you have different skills, you have different life stories there. You have like enough differences so that you are together more strong. But obviously, it is also maybe good to have some shared values or ideologies or some shared key points to around which you formulate your communities. And also maybe one thing is that you may leave community way in, or like the community doesn't have to mean that you like fully live with each other, or you maybe even have a shared economy. It can be very different stages. So understanding maybe the power of community in a large perspective, maybe already enough and maybe easier to many people, smaller steps.
Wow. Well, thank you very much for taking the time to talk to us today.
Thank you.
And I wish you the best with your village community environment.
Thank you, the same.
According to a study done in Sweden by Vlaslov, psychological suffering plays a role in motivating people to move back out into the countryside to live a simpler and more local life closer to nature. People are just tired of the meaningless way we are connecting our lives in the modern society and how, without respect, we relate to nature and other living beings. So we will be joined today by Fanny Toro, who has chosen to live a simpler and more local life closer to nature at Kiru Eco Village. Kiru Eco Village is a community village in the middle of Finnish countryside. The aim of this village is to promote an ecologically and socially sustainable lifestyle in all areas of life. Food is grown organically. What cannot be produced at village is bought locally.